Daddy, we're doing?
I'm doing a podcast, Dizzy. Hello and welcome to the Too Cool for School podcast. I'm your host, Yannick, and on today's episode, I've got some special guests with me, some of my former students, and we're going to be talking about their experience of A-level. So I'll allow them to introduce themselves and if they can just share what subjects they are studying.
Hi, I'm Nick. I'm in year 13. I study maths, physics and computer science.
Hi, I'm Ben. I study maths, economics and computer science.
Hi, I'm Teresa. I study physics, maths, chemistry and biology.
Okay, cool stuff, cool stuff. Physics, maths, chemistry and biology. Okay, just showing off there. Cool. So the last time I left you guys was about 3 years ago. In year 11, you guys were doing your GCSEs. And now you're in your final year of sixth form, doing A-levels. What's the transition been like from GCSEs to A-levels? And what's been the most surprising thing for you guys?
I feel like the main difference between GCSE and A-level is obviously it's the workload, the increase in A-level. But the thing that I like prefer A-level over GCSE is it's the subjects. I feel like with GCSE, there's so many subjects and a lot of them you find yourself like you don't really want to do them. Like especially like I did French. I didn't really enjoy French.
Yeah.
So I felt like I was not wasting my time, but I knew I wasn't going to pursue it after. So it's kind of just a bit.
Yeah,
it's a bit boring, but with A-level, it's like I'm interested in the subject, so I do what I want to do.
Because you picked it essentially. Yeah, you picked it essentially. No, that's interesting. And you speak about workload. Like, how significant is the workload difference from like GCSE to A-levels like for you?
I mean, obviously A-levels is more in depth. That's what it's the A-level,
yeah.
But I feel like it's a lot. It's not necessarily that it's a lot more content, but it's not necessarily that it's harder. It's just you cover so much more, like especially maths. It's not necessarily that it's harder maths. I mean, obviously it's a little bit harder, but it's just so much more covered that you wouldn't even like imagine of in GCSE, especially in year 13. Yeah. Like some of the stuff that we do, the calculus that we do, I didn't even think it existed in GCSE.
So well, that's interesting. How about for you guys?
Yeah, so for me personally, it was, I found it more as a big jump because with my GCSEs, I was easily able to get away with not really revising for them. It was more of a thing that I just went into the exams and you can pretty much get away with not revising because it's stuff that is kind of like common knowledge, foundational. But then you go into A-levels and then you'll find yourself having to go home every single day to cover content because you don't necessarily understand it in class. And it's not stuff that you just pick up as you go on in life. This is stuff that is only specific to the subject. And I found myself very quickly being a lax person to having to go home and having to constantly ask questions online because I didn't understand necessarily the stuff that was being taught. It was a massive jump.
Okay. No, that's interesting. That's interesting. And like when you started in sixth form and you was looking around like within the classroom, like where there's certain students that you was looking at their levels and you're like, yeah, like this student knows his stuff. And did that sort of encourage you as well to go home and be like, I need to be on point?
Yeah, 100%. Because when in any school, there's always the students that are like naturally very gifted and there's students who work really hard and study prior. So going into the class, you suddenly are like, I've never seen these things before. And then a teacher's asking a question, does anyone know how to do this? And then there's another student who's explaining it perfectly. And it's kind of twofold in a way, because there's a sense where you're like, okay, I want to be at that student's level, therefore I have to work harder. But also in a sense, it's also diminishing to yourself because you're thinking, why does this person know this and I don't know it, but we're both supposed to be at the same level because we're doing the same subjects.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I think it's like really encouraging because like before we went into year 12 in the summer, I did some maths because I thought, let me get a little head start. And I went in and I thought, okay, I know some of this stuff. I won't be caught off guard.
Yeah.
And I look around me and there's other people and they know what they're doing much, much better than me. And it's like a challenge to keep up.
Motivation.
And, yeah.
That's important. How about you, Teresa? Like, what was the biggest like transition from GCSEs to A-levels for you?
No, I think I agree with what they were saying about sitting in a class full of like-minded people because obviously what Ben was talking about earlier, in GCSEs, you're just doing subjects. Like, you're doing the compulsory, like, English, math, science. Me, personally, I had no, like, interest in English literature, and now I'm doing all STEM. So, like, I'm sitting in a classroom with people who enjoy the same stuff that I do. And, yeah, it motivates you, like, to do better. You want to do the best that you can because you're seeing all these people work so hard for something that they're passionate about. But at the same time, it diminishes you because you feel like, is my passion enough to get me to where I want to go to? So,
And how about, like, the classroom environment and, like, you know, thinking about behaviour? I'm not going to, you know, comment for the audience whether you guys were well-behaved students or not. You guys can figure that out for yourselves. But in terms of the behaviour, like, was there a shift as well? Like, do you go into the classroom and notice, like, the way that the students behave and act is totally different to, like, secondary school?
Yeah, I feel like with our school, at least, our class sizes are a lot smaller. So you also find that there's a lot less distraction, but the classes are a lot more chill and a lot more relaxed because it feels more personal with the teacher and the other students, because there is opportunity to talk to everyone, like, in the lesson, and more opportunity to get to know your peers better. So I feel like the smaller classes contribute to that. But
yeah, it's also like people are there because in that class because they want to do that subject. So they're not going to really misbehave because they picked the subject because most of them are... they want to do the subject, they're interested in it. So the behaviour, there's no reason to misbehave. So you're just damaging yourself.
However, I think in every class always there's like...
there's a clown.
There's always a clown.
There's a clown. I hope you're not the clown, Nick.
No, never.
Okay. never.
No, but I think as well, there's like in sixth form, you get different breeds of people. There's people who like, they go to school and like they're completely involved in their work. Like, they don't want to really mess around. And then there's, like, the average sixth former, they can mess around a bit, but they can still get the work done. But I think there's always going to be, like, a group of people in any classroom that they're not necessarily fully involved in their work. And sometimes it leads them to mess around a bit. And you'd think going in sixth form, a lot of these people everyone would be serious. And that's how initially I thought when I'm going in, everyone seems so serious. But then very quickly I realised that a lot of these people, or quite a few of them, they're like unserious students in the sense that like they don't always do their homework, and sometimes in class they might mess around, they're doing things they're not doing the work. So it's kind of funny because you're thinking sixth form, everyone's serious, but it's the same way as secondary. These people still don't change. You still get these people, but it's just like there's a fewer amount of them.
But like in sixth form, like you get exposed. Like if you're not doing the work, you're not doing the homework. Like, especially now we're getting to the end of year 13, it's clear to see the people that like, started off as in year 12. Like, in GCSE, like you said earlier, you can kind of relax and kind of just focus in, lock in at the end. But A-level, you can see, like, especially in our school, you can see the difference. People are struggling now coming up to the thing, and the people that are taking it seriously from earlier on.
You can get a sense of who they are. That's interesting. And considering as well that, you know, the secondary school that we were at, didn't have a sixth form, so you guys then had to, you know, transition and go to a different sixth form. And I'm always conscious about like the social aspect of things. Did you find yourselves sort of clinging to your network of like secondary school friends, or was it easy for you guys to sort of go out, make new friends, and socialize? So how was the social life or the socializing aspect of sixth form, you know, how was that for you guys? And sort of think about it in terms of where you guys are now, but also how was it when you first started, you know, the social aspect?
I feel like because obviously everyone has different interests, they have different passions, you're all choosing different subjects, there's not a lot of time in sixth form for you to like mix with other people who don't have the same like, who aren't aligned in the same likes and dislikes as you. There's not a lot of time for you to just go off and talk to new people and whatnot, because as soon as you start sixth form, the work is like present, like the workload is like, there's a lot of pressure on you. So I found that, of course, I was clinging to a lot of my friends from secondary school who did come with me, and I was talking to them, and that was a relationship that was already formed, and I was obviously going to lean on that. But at the same time, it forces you to go into that classroom ready to talk to new people and ready to make new connections, because that's like ultimately what you feel is best for you. And yeah, you're in a new environment, you're alone, so you sort of have to
Especially like we went to a school that obviously they have their own year 11, their own secondary school. So people have already formed friendship groups.
Yeah.
But then again, we're in year 12, we're all 16, 17 years old, especially in our school. I don't know. It's not really hard to find friends.
Yeah.
Because everyone's grown up. I mean, anyone that's like going into year 12 and they're scared. I mean, you got 2 years, you'll definitely make some friends.
Yeah.
I mean, me and Nick, we do, besides from one subject, we do the same subjects.
Yeah.
So we're with each other most of the time anyway.
Yeah.
But made friends pretty quickly.
No, that's positive. That's positive. And is that the same for you as well?
Yes. It's mostly similar. But I think the case is just like, especially being an external student coming into a school, like Ben mentioned, with a bunch of internals who have already these formed friendship groups. I feel like for us personally, it was easier to, we're quite sociable people. So it was easy for us to integrate into these groups already. But I think there's an aspect of it as well. When you have these existing relationships with people from your old secondary school, you kind of diverge away from them kind of. And because when you start to meet new people, at the beginning, you're kind of forced to stick to the group you already know because you guys already know each other and it's easier. But you kind of realize that you're only really speaking to these people because you know them already. And it kind of gets to the point where you start making new friends and you're like, I don't really necessarily like you as much as I used to do.
Yeah.
So you kind of start making new friends and you kind of drop the old ones. Like, not necessarily drop them, but...
Ben sort of looking over. I hope he's not speaking about me.
Yeah. But yeah, no, like... I was very fortunate to have like friends I was pretty close with that I was going out with them prior, so they were pretty close friends. But I'd say there's people I went with to sixth form that I was really close to them at the beginning, but like now near the end, I barely speak to them. It's like a high bye thing.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting when you was talking about like internals and externals, because even when I went to sixth form, you know, many moons ago, like there was always that idea of like the in-group and the out-group. Like we knew we were, you know, the ones that was out of the school that we laid the foundations. And the externals, we used to call them the externals. That's what we used to call them.
Yeah.
Oh, them, oh, that's the externals. So we made a point of showing them and making a vocal. Like, you're not part of us.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you can hang, you can, but you're the externals. Like, remember that you wasn't, you wasn't with us, like, from early. And you also make an interesting point, because I find that often students go to sixth form and at the initial stages, you befriend the people that you're familiar with that went to your sixth form because it's safe, it's comfortable. You know them. But then after a while, you realise when there's other people that, you know, in the sixth form that you can develop those relationships with, you realise that,
like,
I was just with you because it was safe.
It was because it's safe.
You know, and not necessarily because we had anything, you know, any sort of mutual connections, because, you know, there'll be students that you spent 5 years with someone in a secondary school, never spoke to them once, but because you go to sixth form now and you're the only one or two or five from the school, you want to like create a clique or whatever. So yeah, I think that's interesting. I wanted to ask as well, because I'm conscious of the fact that because our school didn't have a sixth form, I'm not sure whether that sort of impacted the preparation that, you know, that you guys, when you were in year 11, had in terms of going into sixth form. Do you guys feel that the school during like your 10, year 11 of GCSEs like really prepared you guys for what sixth form was going to be like?
I don't know how these two found out, but in year 11, some, like, the guy that we know now, I can't remember it, like, I don't mention his name, but he recruited us. He came from St. Michael's.
I know you're talking about.
And he came to St. Thomas More, and he showed us a video, and he showed us, I think it was the head girl, and how she was external, and how a lot of students that went to our school came from St. Thomas More as well, and they were external, and they got along, and he showed us a video about, like, externals coming in and how they fit in. And I think we were lucky. We went to a school well, it's very welcoming. Yeah. And you don't really, I'm not sure about how when you went to school, but there wasn't really kind of divide. They didn't separate us because we're external. Yeah. Kind of welcomed us in, yeah. And it's very welcoming feeling.
And do you guys feel like there's anything that like Tommy Moore did in particular that prepared you guys for going to sixth form and what sixth form was going to be like?
Yeah, I think the preparation was good. I can't really say that it was. I can't really think of any negatives off the top of my head, like any completely damaging things. But yeah, so as Ben mentioned, two representatives from school came in for 2 days, and they basically, or it's a single day, and then they told us about their school, told us about their programs and stuff, and told us, oh, this is what our school offers and this is what we need, and like they showed us like what a normal day in the life is. And that is helpful because, like, personally in my own experience, I wasn't really comfortable going to open days. Like, it wasn't necessarily something I really wanted to do.
Mm.
But looking back on it, maybe I would have been a completely different school if I'd seen an open day. But these schools have pushed, they'd like almost promoted themselves to me.
Okay.
So I knew what I was going into. But it was definitely helpful for the school to bring in representatives.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I understand. So it was good when, like, the other sixth forms, like when we would get like the other sixth forms to come in and do like talks and assemblies and the PSHE days, etc.
Yeah.
Cool. How about you?
I mean, yeah, I agree. Like, it was helpful for them to push us to go out and see other schools or have other schools come in and talk to us about their sixth forms and like get us to go to the open days and just go and figure out what school would be best for us. But in terms of like, if we look away from like the environment of the sixth forms and going there to see the environment, like the workload and what it would be like to just essentially have to leave everyone and everything behind, I don't think I was really prepared for that. And I, to be honest, I don't think anything could have prepared me for that. So it's not necessarily on the school. I feel like leaving that school and leaving everything behind was sort of, it was always in the back of my mind that I had to do that because we didn't have a sixth form. We didn't get those extra 2 years with everyone. But it was also like, oh, so it's actually here. And it was still a shock. Like,
yeah, because like going into St. Thomas More from year seven, you know, there's no year 12, there's no year 13. So you kind of forget about it, but we're all going to be external.
Yeah.
Like there was no internal option. So you kind of have to prepare yourself and just... Yeah.
And knowing that not everyone can leave and go to the same school with you, you have to be ready to say bye to everyone, whether you're ready or not. Like, you have to just give that goodbye and just go.
And I think, and you know, you make a point there, Teresa, because I understand that, yeah, maybe it's not school's like responsibility to do that. But that is something that schools should be able to do, like beyond academics, to basically say to students, like, this is the end of the line. Like, we talk about like GCSEs and A-levels and studying and the work so much that we forget about how it is to detach from a place where, you know, you've been for 5 years, where you've built a community, how it's going to potentially feel like to lose, you know, friendships and make new friendships, you know, in terms of like going out and having to like travel independently and take different routes and whatever else. So all of these, you know, all of these things matter, and it's definitely important. I wanted to, if you guys could go back and reflect and give yourself one piece of advice. So if you was to go back to like year 11 Teresa, year 11 Ben, year 11 Nick, and give yourself one piece of advice that would help prepare and set you up for A-levels, what would that advice be? Just one piece of advice.
I'd say set good habits early, so you're not setting these habits later on. You're not having to fix bad habits later on.
Mm.
I don't know. I feel like I'm the complete opposite. I was a pretty serious person in like secondary school. So I would say it's never that deep. Mm. I would tell myself it's just never that deep.
Okay. You thought you was a serious person?
Okay. Maybe not serious like personality wise, but I feel like mentally go home at the end of the day and I just think about things a lot, you know? Like, you obviously go home, you let it sit in. So it's just never that deep.
I think the main thing I'll tell myself, it's more about consistency than just starting. Like, year 12, September, October, I would say I was pretty serious. But then you get to December, we did like kind of like small tests, and I did really well in December. So I thought, I can lay back a little bit. And then obviously you have to catch up again. So I feel like even if it's not every day, come back home, do revision from day dot. Just set a little bit every now and then and just keep it going. Be more consistent than just a huge workload.
Yeah. No, those are all good, you know, those are all good points. And I think it is important to set those good habits, you know, early. Like, what are the things that you want to build on, whether it's, you know, things around punctuality, whether it's things about, you know, organisation and stuff like that. And similarly, like you said, sometimes it's not that deep.
Yeah.
Because you start to worry about things that you ultimately don't have any, like, control over. And when you acknowledge that it's not that deep, and that you can't control everything in the world, it just gives you a sense of peace, and now your shoulders are relaxed, and you're able to get on with whatever you need to get on, you know, with a much more better mindset. And like Ben said, like, consistency, you know, consistency is key. Like, how do I keep, you know, working at this rate efficiently, you know, for a long period of time in a way that's sustainable? Because what you don't want to do is work yourself like crazy and then burn out. But it's about, you know, how do you find that, you know, how do you find that balance? Because I always see it as like this, like, you're always competing. Like, you're always competing with people. Like, that time that you're not revising, someone else in your classroom is at home doing that revision. So they can apply for the same course at the same university that's only got a certain amount of places. And sometimes you just think about our sixth form. But how about the sixth form round the corner? How about the sixth form in the other borough? How about the sixth form outside of London? How about the sixth form in the Midlands? And, you know, when we're starting to think about, like, uni and stuff like that. So, yeah, that's important. I wanted to ask as well, since I mentioned balance, how do you guys manage the sort of workload balance and, like, personal life, social life, extracurricular? I don't know if you guys work part-time or do whatever. Like, how do you guys manage that with studying?
I think it's good to set out a timetable, but then it's like, it's kind of hard to stick to the timetable, like, consistently, because, you know, you might make plans.
You set out a timetable for your social life?
No, as in, like, just for, like, revision.
Okay.
You set a timetable, so, like, I know Saturday, I don't know, from 1 to 3, I'm doing work, and then the rest of the Saturday I have off.
Yeah.
But then you don't know when, like, 6 months ahead of time, you don't know when
something's going to happen.
Also. So I think timetable's kind of, it's helpful for the week, for the Monday to Friday. The weekend, it's not really, that's the only thing I can really do.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah,
I think I don't do timetables. I think it comes down to what you were saying about, like, when does this competitiveness with other people stop and, like, not getting burnt out. So I feel like having that timetable, I'm just going to end up burning myself out. I don't know if this is, I don't speak for everyone on this couch, obviously, but having that timetable, I just don't think it works for me. I have to go with how I feel that day. And if I feel I need to take a break, I take a break. Obviously, I have to think about my education. And I have my priorities straight, I think, I hope. But yeah, I don't think timetables work for me. It really depends on how I feel that day.
Okay. Yeah, so for me personally, I tried timetables, but that didn't necessarily work for me, because you quickly find out that you may have to allocate more time than you originally thought, and you're applying time constraints to things that may necessarily need more or less time. But then it kind of, I had a realization that all productivity flows, and we call it like being in love with the jug, almost like being in love with the process of working. So I quickly found out when I started to actually appreciate the process of the things that I wanted to get, that things started to come easily and more efficiently. So what I quickly found out was that the night before going to sleep, I had just on a notepad on like my computer or like a sticky note, I'd write down all the things that I wanted to do the next day. And then however long it took. And even if I finished it ahead of time, I know I have the rest of the day. I've already done all the things I needed to do. And any time I had later, it's free time for me. So it's just really understanding that the process, in order to succeed in the things you want, the process as well is part of suffering. You have to suffer in the process. So even if I wake up one day and I don't necessarily want to do this work, I have to say to myself, I have to suffer today so that I can enjoy tomorrow.
Yeah. I think what's beautiful about A-levels is it shouldn't be suffering. It should be like, because you pick a subject, I mean, I know you get three choices, maybe you don't like one of them, but at least I'd hope one or two of the ones you pick, you really enjoy. So you start revising and you go, wait, this is interesting. That's how I feel when I do like economics, for example. I started doing something, I go, wait, that links to the news. I've seen that on the news. And it's like, it gets more and more interesting. Yeah. Then you find yourself like reading books or reading articles, and then revision, like, it doesn't become a chore. And then I look at like my time table. I don't see it as like a chore. It's not forced to do it. But I look at it and go, oh, it's 6 o'clock on a Wednesday. I should do some economics, and then start doing it.
And I think this is why it's important to sort of have like the different voices and the different opinions that we have here, because in the same way everyone learns differently, everyone, you know, studies differently, and everyone's process of revision and whatever else, you know, is different. Like what works for one person, you know, might not work for another person. And I think, you know, there's going to be listeners and people that are looking in that will appreciate everything that you guys have said. Or some people might be listening and saying, you know what, I don't really use a timetable, but it's working for Ben, let me try it out. Or some people might, you know, hear what you said, Nick, and like, actually, yeah, even when I'm not on it, I need to, you know what I'm trying to say, if I bang it out now, no, Saturday I'm free, I'm jogging. So it's being able to appreciate, you know, everyone's point of view. And opinion, so that's amazing. I wanted to ask as well, and this has just come to my mind. So when you guys were in school, like, parents were proper on you guys.
Yeah,
education. I know, because your parents be belling up my phone. Anyway. Parents were proper on you guys. Has that shifted in sixth form? Like, are they still onto you guys, or do they have that perception of, bro, you guys are in sixth form, like, you're 17, 18, like, you're independent, we'll leave you guys to yourself. Like, how's that been in terms of, like, parental engagement?
I feel like I'm in a quite unique position where I do computer science and my dad's a teacher.
Okay,
so he teaches computer science, so like an hour or two, like every other day, we'll end up doing work, or I see him marking papers and I go, he gives me the paper and he says, do you know how to do this? Yeah. And then, yes, obviously it's more laid back because we're old enough. I mean, I'm 18. No one has to tell me to do my revision, because it's, at the end of the day, it's my life. If I don't do well on my A-levels, no one else can do anything about that. So I kind of get help with my dad and just relax, oh, that's do
cool,
some work.
Man. That's cool.
Yeah, so... Obviously, I have immigrant parents, so for my parents to educate, I was always, from an early age, education was always the only way to succeed. So in secondary school, they were already on my back. And funny enough, no one thought I was going to pass my GCSEs, because like, I'd done really, really bad in my exams. So when I did well in my exams, respectively well in my exams, they were like pretty surprised. So then they almost like laid back and said, okay, we're going to trust you because you've done it before. We think you can do it again. But then sometimes if my parents see like maybe I've been slacking off a bit, they might just come into my room. Like, oftentimes my mom comes into my room and is like, why are you not studying?
Mm-mm.
And then it kind of kicks back. It's like, okay, I need to chill out and study a bit.
Yeah.
But 100%, I think your parents, as they see you grow older, they're still on your back, like saying you need to study. Like, this is, education is the way for you. But it's kind of laid back. They kind of like, I think instead of them like holding you, like literally holding your hand, they're more like guardrails, trying to like, they'll stop you going off the path completely.
Yeah.
I mean, like Mr. Pope, I remember he said something like, they said, if you do really well in your GCSEs or you surprise your parents, it shows your parents that you're capable and you can do it on your own. So then they kind of relax on A-level because they've seen you do it before. So they have a bit more faith in you.
Mm. Yeah. I think I'm similar to Nick. I have immigrant parents as well. So, like, coming here, she expected me, like, my mom at least, she expected me the best from me. If I'm not achieving what I should be achieving or what she knows I'm capable of, then that sort of independence just goes away. And I feel like I think I did well in my GCSEs. And that sort of showed to my mom that, yeah, academically, if you give me that independence and that space for me to just do what I need to do to get to the finish line and get the results I need, then.
Yeah.
So she's become more lax. GCSE, she was definitely more on my case, seeing me be a bit lax where I shouldn't be. But similar to Nick, it's not like they're holding your hands anymore. It's sort of like they're just those guardrails on the path. And yeah, they just stop you from diverting into places that you shouldn't be.
No. And you know what? You make an interesting point, Teresa, when you was talking about like your expectation and what parents think you're capable of. Because sometimes, you know, I used to often find, especially when I was growing up, what my parents expected of me and what I was capable of was two different things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like they expected, like and I did like well in my GCSEs. Like I got like A to C's, like predominantly A's and B's, but I felt like they wanted A stars.
Yeah.
I don't think that I was an A-star student. And I don't think I could have... Because being an A-star student is not just about the knowledge. It's about, like, the work ethic, the application, and, like, all of those things encompass, you know, your ability to be able to, like, you know, produce, like, how you study, how you revise, your memory retention, all of those things. And I don't think I was that A-star student. But they swore, you know, to God that, yeah, that's what I should be getting. Like how do you guys manage that expectation of parents based on what you guys feel you're actually capable of?
I don't ever see myself as like an A star student or an A student. I just always think if everyone around me is telling me that I can do well, then they're seeing something that I'm not seeing. Maybe my self-judgment is clouded, because especially if you go to like parents' evenings and whatnot, and they're telling you your child is going to do really well in the subjects, like they're going to do well. I just think they need to try work a bit harder and they'll get there. They'll get to that A, they'll get to that A star, they'll get to that B or whatever grade that you need. Then you if everyone around you is echoing the same thing, your parents is now echoing it, then they're seeing something that you're not seeing, because you're not always going to see yourself truly for what you are. So
if for you, if you don't see that, is that motivation for you?
Yeah, I feel like, because sometimes I forget that I can actually like, I can perform, I can do well, and I'm just sitting there like, oh, I can't get this done. But then I just have to remember that, like, there are people who were there rooting for me. Well, that sounds too motivational. Like, inspirational, like, they're rooting for me.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if any of you guys can relate, but I've done a paper, like, let's say I get a B, and I look at it, I show my mom says, only a B.
Yeah.
You didn't get A. And I'm looking at her saying, I was proud. And it makes you disheartened and think, I don't know if I can do better than a B. But then you also, like what Teresa said, you've got someone behind you that really thinks that you can do better. It's kind of a motivation. And you come back, and then if you get like an A or an A star or whatever, and you show your parents, and then they're really happy, and it's really nice. I don't know. Yeah. It's a nice feeling to show your mom a paper, and she goes, I really like
it. I think especially your parents, they've known you for your whole life. Yeah. Like they birthed you, they raised you, they got you like to where you are now, essentially.
Mm.
Or at least for most people, they like your parents got you to where you are now. So if they're telling you they see this, they know you better than anyone else at the end of the day. So
yeah,
I think there's a bit of truth to that.
And I think going to Ben's example, I think parents need to have like a balance of how to manage that, because what you don't want is like I know kids that have worked their socks off. Like I know, like even like if I think about like GCSEs and the 3 year groups that, you know, I had at Tommy Moore, like there were certain students that, you know, when it came to like results day and they're showing me their results, and for them it could be that they've got, you know, fives and fours and maybe like 1.6 in maths or a random subject, but I know how much they worked for that. So I'm hoping that, you know, when they're coming home and they're saying like, look, mum, dad, I got a B I got a C. That, yes, the parents are motivating and saying, there, you can, you know, like, keep pushing, but also be proud of the work that they've done. Because not everyone, just because the highest is a 9 or an A star, that shouldn't be the ceiling for everyone. Because if your child, you know, is working at a 4 level and they got that 5, just because it's not 9 and it's there's a bit of disparity, don't think that the work that they've done, you know, is not worth being proud of. And that's why it's important as parents to really be intentional with the details that we know about our child's work. Because if you're looking at your child's assessment and you're seeing, hold on, they was getting 4s these first 2 terms, and then all of a sudden, so you will know what the 5 means to them before they even open their mouth, you know, and tell you. So that's very important. I wanted to ask about, like, your A-level subjects. Like, how did you guys come about in picking your A-level subjects? 2 years later, are you happy with the subjects? Are there any regrets? Are you looking back thinking, I can't lie, man, I should have picked, you know, so-and-so? I see Teresa smiling, so we'll go to you.
For me first?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. Originally, I think year 10, I didn't want to do STEM. I did not like STEM. Yeah, I was ready to leave it behind after GCSEs. And then I had one talk with my math teacher. It was in a maths intervention. I wasn't even meant to be there. I just happened to stay behind and do like a practice paper in that intervention. And we were talking about what we wanted to do at A-levels. And when I said, I'm not doing maths, I'm dropping the subject, I'm sick and tired of these numbers, he looked at me and said, what, you're not doing maths? And I went home and I thought about, like, why was everyone so shocked that I'm not doing maths? And then I was like, okay, but this is the only subject I revise when I get home. I like it. Like, I like revising maths. Why am I not picking STEM? I do triple science. I'm doing maths. I'm doing all of this. And I'm not going to do STEM in the end of it. So I was thinking about it. I was like, okay. And then as time went on, I just lost my passion for, like, English literature, for, like, RE, for all of that. And I found myself leaning towards STEM. So I ended up picking... Originally, I picked maths, chem, bio to do medicine. But then I picked up physics along the way because I was like, I don't know if medicine's going to work. So maybe I need something for engineering. But yeah.
We love triple science so much, GCSE. You did it for A-levels.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Cool.
I feel like for me, maths... I mean, I've always liked, I've enjoyed maths. GCSE, I was unlucky to not get it. I got 3 marks away from a 9. I was really upset, but that kind of motivated me. So I knew I was doing it for A-level. Computer science, I knew because of my dad and stuff. I knew I was going to do computer science. Economics is kind of split into 2. I think macro is, like, really interesting, and then micro is, it's a struggle. I mean, if I could go back, it's part of me that wishes I picked business. Because it's a little bit easier, more to do with numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a bit better. Economics is a lot of essay writing. And I underestimated it when I walked in year 12. But I don't really regret my choices.
Yeah, so for me, from a very young age, my parents always instilled into me that, like, computer science was the thing that I was going to do when I was older. And I always, like, grew up around computers. So for me, it was always in my head that I was going to do computer science at university. So I just picked subjects that kind of allowed me to go to a good university in computer science. But along the way, I picked physics as well because I enjoyed physics during GCSEs. But one thing that people tell you is that physics is the hardest A-level, which is I underestimate. I think most of us underestimate how hard it is. So it's really hard. So then looking back on it now, I sometimes wonder whether if I had done more research, because now in sixth form, I then found out I still could have done computer science at these good universities without necessarily picking these harder subjects. Now I think, is there possibly a different path I could have gone down and still got to where I was, which there is, but I just never knew that was available at the time.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. Physics was probably, I don't think it's my regret, actually. I think biology is my biggest regret out of all my subjects. Not because I don't like biology, but because it weighs down on, like, there's so much content, it weighs down on my A-level so much that I find myself putting so much time into the subjects, I don't have enough for all my other subjects.
Mm.
But I would swap biology for psychology because I feel like I just have more interest there. And even now, like, I've applied for medicine, but only 4 of my 5 options can be medicine. My 5th one's neuroscience. So I wouldn't even do all 3 sciences.
Okay. No, very interesting. And I think, you know, it will give food for thought for those who, you know, are sort of considering A-levels in terms of, you know, what they pick, what are the things they should be looking out for, and what are the questions that they should be asking. So, you know, even one of the things that I always used to do with students who would ask if they're, like, confused around, like, A-levels, I'll say to them, like, work forward and go backwards. So, like, if you want to go to uni, think about the course that you want to do at uni. Then look at the entry requirements and whatever else, because you can see from there whether they require specialist subjects at A-levels or whether they don't. And, in, you know, you're doing your research in that way. And I guess it links as well to what we were talking about earlier in terms of, like, independence. Like, your parents ain't going to do this for you. They expect you to do it for yourself. So you can't even turn around and say to your parents, oh, you know what, I should have. They're going to be thinking, listen. And especially for, you know, for those with immigrant parents, their mindset is, I came to this country for you to go to this school. I chose the school for you for 5 years or whatever. After that, you should know the system better than me. So how are you even coming to me to ask me questions about, you know, whatever else? But I guess it begs the question of whether more needs to be done, like, within schools to really, encourage students to be fully prepared in terms of what sixth form will look like in terms of, like, subjects and whatever else. So, like based on that, so then what advice would you give to, like, your 11 students who are thinking about the A-levels that they want to pick based on, like, your experiences?
I'd say A-levels aren't necessarily the only path to go to these universities you want to go to, because I quickly found out, like, I thought the only way to get into these good universities, like these Rush Group universities, was just to do A-levels. But then very quickly, I'm speaking to these BTEC students and they're like, I was like, oh, what universities you get into? And they're saying, oh, University of Birmingham, University of Manchester. I'm like, but you do BTECs. And like, oh, yeah, I can get in with BTECs. And BTECs are considered to be easier because there's, like, it's the workload is more evenly distributed across the year. So then I was thinking, if I could have done BTECs and still got into the same position as these guys, why didn't I just, like, evenly balance it out? Like, I was always told that A-levels was the only way.
Yeah, that's the misconception, isn't it? People have this misconception that BTECs are easier, but they're technically not, because even when you apply for it, it depends on the level.
Yeah.
Because it will tell you, like, for example, BTEC level 3 equivalent to A-level. It says it there. That just because it's called a BTEC and one's called an A-level, like, you know, and this is some of the misconceptions. So, yeah, that's interesting.
I feel like a lot of parents, they hear the word BTEC and they automatically, they get scared. I mean, I know someone that goes to school with us, he's doing a hybrid, he's doing 2 A-levels and a BTEC. And he's got into Russell Group universities. So it's just, it's not necessarily about the name of the subject. Even if you just do a BTEC or even a CTEC, you can still get into a good school. It's just...
Yeah, 100%. And I think, I don't know, and I was saying to you guys, you know, earlier before the recording that I had one of my other former students on Myers, and he was talking about his experience as an apprentice. And, like, Myers, he's crazy smart. Like, I remember him, you know, from GCSEs, he could have gone to Russell Group Uni easy, but he chose to do an apprenticeship. And now he's doing finance with Samsung on a 3-year apprenticeship course. But even me growing up, like, apprenticeships, the idea behind it, not the idea behind it, the conception behind, or one of the misconceptions was you do apprenticeship if you're not smart enough to do, like, an A-levels or whatever. But I think Myers is showing that it's not about smart or whatever. It's just about deciding the pathway that you want to do. And he didn't want to go uni. He wanted to go straight into work. And he saw this as a better, you know, opportunity. So it's about having greater knowledge in regards to like the pathways, you know, after GCSEs, which I think is important. But yeah, Teresa, how about you? Like, what advice would you give to like the 11s who are thinking about maybe like picking A levels and stuff?
I think do your research, because the course that I applied to, there's not really like an apprenticeship way into it. I want to do medicine, so for maybe like computer science or engineering, there is an apprenticeship, but with medicine, there's not. And even if it's just like looking at one university, because a lot of the time the entry requirements are the same for like most of the unis. But just do your research, because I know they were looking at GCSE grades as well, and I didn't know that until I was in year 12, and it's too late to change anything about that then. So
yeah,
just make sure you know what, like, you know what you need to get from early on. You know what you need to be doing.
I think one thing, like key thing, is just take a look at the syllabus. Like, look at the before you like are dead set on, let's say, like physics A level. Just not just scare you. Just look a little bit through what some of the work that you're doing. Like, are you interested? Can you see yourself doing this in the future? If you can't see yourself doing it, like, look at the other options, because there's so many different A levels you can pick from. It's not.
I think also look at the reviews, because I saw biology reviews, I saw chemistry reviews, I saw physics reviews, even maths, and I was like, okay, yeah, people are saying they're hard, people are saying they regret them, but like, I think I can tough it out, I think I can get through it, and now I'm sitting in year 13 thinking they were onto something.
Yeah,
I should have listened, they've been through it.
No, that's interesting, and I want to talk a bit about, like, you know, sort of like mental health and well-being, in a sense where I know that A-levels can be very stressful, and I know that GCSEs were stressful as well, and one of the things that, you know, I would recall, especially during school, is during assemblies, to talk to the year group about, you know, like managing everything, like, don't, you know, overwork yourself, you know, take care of yourself, like self-care and whatever else. Like, how do you guys cope with stress and the pressure and the expectation? Like, what sort of things, you know, do you guys do that you can maybe share with like the audience? Because I'm conscious of the fact that, you know, like when I release like my episodes, it attracts the people who is connecting with the theme. Does that make sense? So
yeah,
I know there's going to be either parents or young people and students who are going to be listening to this, because they're like, actually, I can relate to this because I'm in year 11 or year 12 or year 13. And sometimes it's easier listening to peers talk about, actually, these are my coping mechanisms and this is the way I manage my mental health, rather than someone like me who they'll be seeing like as an adult or a parent or a teacher, and it's like, oh, you know, you guys are always talking, like, blah, blah, blah. So what advice would you give in terms of like how you guys cope with, like, stress and pressure?
Yeah, so I think, firstly, you have to talk about, like, in sixth form, there's kind of, like, this general consensus, like, if you're stressed, it's okay, because everyone else is stressed as well, so it's normal. But it's not necessarily normal. It's not normal to be, like, having so much workload where you're stressed. And I quickly found myself, like, I didn't know it, but I was developing a lot of anxiety around my work, because I was like having all this work that I didn't know necessarily how to balance initially. And then you quickly find yourself in a situation where you're looking at like a bunch of work that you need to complete, but you just don't know how to do it. And in a situation like that, your mind just goes blank. Like, you literally don't know what to do. And very quickly you can find yourself in a slump because you don't know what to do. And what I found very helpful for me personally was just to organize all my work, just to say, okay, I need to do this, I need to do that. Because I think the main stress from sixth form comes from, not from the thought of the exams itself, but the work behind it. Because you have a lot of work to do, and the thought in the back of your head is like, I know I have a lot of work to do, but I don't know necessarily how to do all the work.
Mm.
And if I don't do the work, then I'm going to do bad in my exams, and I'm going to be more anxious for my exams because I know I'm not ready. So I think the best thing that worked for me was just preparing everything beforehand, so I knew I'd covered all the work, because I can't be stressed about the exam if I know I've already prepared for the exam.
Mm. I mean, a lot of students, I mean, I don't know, people relate, is like procrastinating and saying, I'll do it later. But I think the main thing that I think to myself is, even if it's 30 minutes, even if it's not necessarily a long stint of revising, 30 minutes is better than nothing. So with computer science, there's like a lot of coursework to do. And putting it off, and I understand, like, you look at something, you don't know how to do it. You just, everyone, they look at it, they're stuck. They just put it off and they put it to the back of their mind. They just ignore it. But even if you do 10 minutes, even if you do 20 minutes, that can, over time, that compiles and then it helps you in the long run. And you, it's much better than just putting it off.
I feel like, obviously, what Nick was saying, like, everyone's stressed. You do your A-levels, you do your CTEC, your apprenticeships, your whatever you're doing, you're going to be stressed. It's going to stress you out. But also remembering that your stress and your mental health and your emotions and everything are valid. That, yeah, you need to consider everyone else around you and you need to be considerate. But sometimes you just need to put yourself first. If you feel stressed and you just want to talk to someone about it, you want to vent it out, feel free to, like, just do what you have to do for yourself and make sure that you are prioritizing your mental health, even if that means before studying, before opening a single book, even like unpacking your bag, you just take those 10-15 minutes to ground yourself and really think, do I need to be doing this and this and this? And you just cut things out of your life, then do what you have to do. Like, the way you deal with your stress and your mental health and your emotions is completely personal to you, and it's nobody's business to tell you what to do.
I mean, everyone's different,
yeah,
obviously.
Yeah, everyone's different.
So you can't, there's not really a strict rule, especially when it comes to mental health, but just taking breaks, going for a walk, stopping, frequent breaks, I think that's really helpful. And then it doesn't really feel like one continuous study period if you break it up. And then you notice you get to the end of the day and you realise you've actually done a lot of work, and it doesn't feel like a lot of work because you've gone for a 10-minute walk, you've stepped away, you've played a little bit of games, like you step away. As long as it doesn't get too much, it's all right.
Yeah, like what works for me and Ben, it's not the same thing. What works for me and Nick is not the same thing. Like, do what you have to do for yourself.
Yeah, that's important. Like, make it personal to yourself. And I guess, you know, you can ask people for advice, like, oh, what do you do? And you can try it out. And, you know, but the walk might not work for you and something else might work for you. So it's about trial and error, you know, just figuring out what works for you. And what works for you 1 week, the next week, you might not even want to do it. So, you know, like you said, Teresa, making it personal to you. I want to talk, you know, a bit about, like, setbacks, especially in terms of, like grades and exams. Like, how do you guys deal with setbacks? Like, when you get that one paper that you're like, damn, like, this is mad. Like, how do you guys deal with that in a way that, like, it doesn't bring you down? It doesn't, like, it doesn't make you feel like it's the end of the world. Although, for some people, you know, like, it could be the end of the world. I remember, like, when I first started at Tommy Moore, there was a particular girl, I remember her name, I'm not going to say her name. She was, I can't remember what class it was. I can't remember whether it was science, it was either science or maths paper. And everyone in the class got, like, a grade 9, but she got 8. Oh, yeah, she was finished. But I'm thinking, you got a grade 8. But everyone in the class got a 9. And, you know, for her, that felt like a setback. And some people's setbacks might not be that extreme, but it'll be good to know, like, from you guys, like, you know, if you've ever had a paper like that, how did you deal with it to sort of get your head right and say, you know what, cool, like, we're moving forward?
I mean, the first thing, like, I've said to myself, especially, like, from, like, year 10, is, number one, I'm not competing with other people in my class. I'm competing with myself. I'm always trying to get better than I did last time. So if I see a result and I think, oh, I've not done, I thought I did a lot better and it surprised me that I did bad, I think to myself, first of all, you try to look through the paper. You try to look, where did you mess up on, and try to revise that. I think that's kind of what everyone does. But it's kind of like looking at yourself. And even if it's not necessarily, like, you're not getting a grade 9 or whatever, if you've seen that you got a 7 and you got an 8 now, or a 5 to a 6, that's an improvement. So any sort of improvement is good. So it's not necessarily looking around and seeing other people walking out with 9s, but you're just trying to improve on yourself.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like, especially in physics, where the grade boundaries are actually really low, because like it's really hard to get top marks in physics. Sometimes, like, this is going to sound really unserious, but sometimes you just have to laugh it off. You just, you see that grade, you see the score, you see all your silly mistakes in that paper.
Or if you even, don't laugh, you cry.
Yeah, if you don't laugh, you cry. Sometimes you just have to, you just have to take life as it is, and you just have to be like, you know what, I got this grade. Yeah. I'm just going to work on it now.
The worst feeling is when you walk out of an exam and you know you've done bad.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do.
But I don't know, for that girl who got the grade 8 and everyone else got grade 9, I have no good advice, because I too would be devastated. But at the same time, you just have to remember that, yeah, okay, you're not the top in the class, but you're still like one of the top in the school. So that grade 8 is still great.
I think I agree as well, because I think the way I learned how to cope with it was when I started physics, because physics, you, in GCSE, you can get like, you can pretty much get full marks like very pretty easy if you just do the work. But in physics, a lot of the times you will just do, you'll revise as much as you think is possible, but then there's like a bunch of questions on the test that you're like, I've never seen this before, like how is anyone answering this? And then I think the first thing to do is like actually understand that you did bad in the first place. Like I think a lot of the times we see a bad grade, you're like, oh no, this can't be, like it's just a one-off. But sometimes we need to accept that, okay, maybe I'm the problem, maybe I didn't put enough work in. And then as well, I think sometimes it's a thing of swallowing our pride and asking for help sometimes, because like sometimes you're looking at papers like, I don't know what more I can do to improve, like I've done my best. And then swallowing that pride and then going asking like a teacher for help, because your teachers, obviously they know best, they've been teaching the syllabus for many years, and just going to your teachers like, I'm in a bit of a pickle, I've tried everything, I don't know what to do, perhaps can you explain a topic and maybe you'll see you miss something, or perhaps I'm doing something wrong here, I don't understand, like maybe you can tell me something. But I think it's coming, accepting that you've done bad and asking for help is ultimately the best things as well. Understanding the subject and how the grey boundaries work a lot of the times, because for physics, sometimes, like, I remember my mocks, I got like 70-something%, and for me, I was happy because I made a big improvement, but then I'm looking at my mocks and I'm thinking, I thought I was going to get 90% because all the hours, all the hours I put in. But then I'm asking my teacher what the grade boundary is, and they're like, oh, no, you did really, really well. Like, and I'm thinking, oh, okay. Like, relatively in the subject, you think you can do bad and get low marks, but the grade boundaries actually show that you're actually really capable.
Yeah, okay, that's important. Yeah, that's important to know. And as we finish off, I wanted to know, what's the plans for the future? So you guys are in year 30 now, you've got your A-level exams coming up, so what's the plans post-summer for you guys?
Well, hopefully uni. Hopefully medicine, if not neuroscience. Look for a job. Well, I've got one now, but that's not going to last me for uni. Just enjoy not having to worry about A-levels. I'm so ready to be done.
Cool. Good luck on your medicine journey, and hopefully we'll might get you guys back in 3 years time to see how how long is medicine?
5 years in England. Scotland, I think they do 6. That's to be a junior doctor, I believe, and then specialise in, I don't know.
Well, 5 years, okay.
I'm going to uni, hopefully. Economics or accounting and finance, I applied to a bunch, to different things. I mean, I don't know, like Teresa, get a job, relax, go on holiday during the summer, and then come back ready for the challenge.
Yeah, so my situation is a bit different from theirs. I also have a few apprenticeships lined up at some pretty big firms, so I'm currently in the process of deliberation and picking between the two. So I'm not really sure which one I'm going to do right now, but wherever life takes me, it takes me, so yeah.
What firms are these?
It's a bit private.
That's cool. No, that's amazing to hear, man. And you know, it's good to sort of see how far, you know, you guys have all come, you know, in your respective fields, and just to see like the growth, you know, the growth. And I know, you know, many people, parents, you know, teachers and people listening in, you know, will appreciate and take some seeds and take some knowledge in terms of like how they can better themselves, whether it's, you know, sixth form teachers, year 11 heads of years, pastoral carers, you know, whatever that may be. So yeah, thank you guys again for coming on. So this has been the Too Cool for School podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please follow us on our social media platforms and subscribe to our YouTube page.